Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Rimebold. We're fresh from a fantastic weekend of divisional playoff action in the NFL. Jeff, we had two great games on Saturday, two great games on Sunday. And even if they weren't actually, when I look back, you can't call Denver and Indianapolis a great game, but there was a developing storyline. I think they were all fascinating games.
Fascinating games and loaded with drama. And like you say, it was all the games, all the plays, all the time. It was what playoff football should be, which is heightened anticipation, heightened effort on the field, heightened intensity by the fans, and certainly, like you say, great storylines the whole weekend.
Surprised you want to talk about height. I mean, stood next to
hey,
Evan
whoa,
at the
I'm
touch
telling
screen.
You talk about taking some shots on Twitter. Jeez. Listen, I'm just going to roll some names off of you. How about Tom Cruise? How about Cole Beasley? How about
Julian Edelman?
How about all my favorite guys under 5'10"? So
it was a fun weekend, though. And, you know, if our voices are a little croaky, you have to bear with us. Chris has given us the good coffee, though. We've got the nice coffee to get us through the podcast. We're going to look at a couple of bits of news. We're going to dig into all four games. I did put out on Twitter a little while ago that we wanted your questions for the mailbag, but I think we're going to talk so much about these games today, Jeff. We'll push the mailbag to Thursday because we are back again this weekend to discuss the conference championships.
Yeah, but, you know, before we get into that, let's really put props where props belong. And that's Chris. I really want to say thank you for this hand-pressed coffee this morning because it is black, it is strong, and it is hand-pressed. And that must mean that listenership must be way up.
Because yeah, we're getting the good coffee. the problem is that the girl upstairs who offered us a coffee as we walked in is going to come down with a couple of cheap cups in a minute. We're going to have to drink that out of politeness. So actually, Nick Pike can have them. Nick, you got a couple of coffees coming, mate. First of all, some news on tickets for the Wembley game. So, the best seats in the house, the individual tickets, premium and club tickets go on sale Tuesday from 10 a.m. So you can start to pick. If you want to pick those games, you can't make all three and you want to pick one or two of them, you can do that from 10 a.m. on Tuesday. All the ticket information is on NFLUK.com. And as we broke the news on Sky Sports on Saturday night, two of those games are early kickoff games. The first one, the Dolphins and the Jets, is 2:30. And then the second one, Jacksonville's game against Buffalo, is a 1:30 kickoff. So, Jeff, that's interesting, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. You know, and I think it's really cool that NFLUK and everybody putting this game on has given the fans an opportunity to get premium seats first. So, if you got a special game that you want to take your son to or your daughter to or your wife to or whatever, and, say you're a Kansas City fan.
Yep.
Well, you can get the best seat in the house that's available for that game. And, to have the ability to pick your own seat, that's amazing because you want to be as close to the action as you possibly can. So, again, I think that's great, and as I understand it, again, talking to the people this morning, those tickets are going fast.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned take your son or take your daughter, because I've just written about this on my website, BritviewNFL.com, my thoughts on the early kickoff games, and I think that there's a business reason for it in the US, the TV ratings and potential for a new TV package, that kind of thing. But I think it's just a good deal here. If we're going to grow this game in the UK,
absolutely,
a lunchtime kickoff for me as a father who takes my kids come to the games, when we had that middle game, Atlanta and Detroit, my kids were back home by 8 or 9 o'clock. That's different than being back after midnight. You know?
Yeah, even if you're somebody from, up north and you got to take the train a couple hours down to London to see the game, you leave on the early train, you come watch the game, and you can have your family home, in the evening and not, disrupt. Because you got to go to school on Monday,
right.
And I think that's really, the essence of the game. That's how we all learned the game is it was always a Sunday afternoon game. I think it is really a great concept. And I think it's been well received in the United States. Certainly the NFL fans that have an opportunity to watch more football, again, now you're getting an extra game. And for the fans here, it's for the families. I think it's a great thing. And every kid that I've ever seen that has an opportunity to come to a game and experience the fanfare, all the buildup, walking into the stadium, all of those things is going to ensure that that young one's going to be a fan of the game for a long time.
Fan for life, aren't they, when they do stuff like that? You know, you get exposed to the game and the
players. And what a great opportunity for a parent, you know, whether it's a mom or a dad, to take a son or a daughter and share that. We're working out the details. I'm going to have a way that we can have a ticket giveaway for one parent to take one child to one of the games over the course of the next few weeks. So listen for that on the pod, because, again, just for all of us, you fell in love with the game here. I fell in love with the game in the middle of the United States. But we all fell in love with the game, and you got to get exposed to it because it is such a great game. Every week I keep getting tweets from people out there, newbies out there, that say, hey, I've never watched the game before, but, you know, I really enjoy the, you know, what you guys are doing on Sky. And, you know, if you enjoy it on Sky, boy, you're really going to love it when you see it firsthand, right up close and personal.
Saturday was a busy night for news. We had the two playoff games, but then came the news just after we went on air that Dick LeBeau, longtime defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers, was resigning, and he was quick to point out resigning, not retiring. 77 years old, oversaw. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but year after year for a while, the Steelers were the top ranked defense in football. You know, you look at Polamalu and James Harrison and Ryan Clark. That was the premier defensive unit in the NFL. What do you make of that, Jeff?
Well, you know, you go back even further than that, and there was a great piece I read this morning on Dick and his career. And there are a couple things that when I first heard he was resigning, I thought, OK, he'd been shoved out the door and that'll be the last we see of him. But I thought it was really, you know, for me personally, it was good to hear that he said, no, I'm not retiring. I'm just resigning. I'm going to coach again, because he is the guy. You know, our system is much like his system. We borrowed so much from him, particularly in the zone blitz area. And for all of us who, you know the guy, he is a tremendous person first, a tremendous football coach second. And, you know, you go back and you start talking about players and you're going back to, you know, guys that, you know, long, long time ago in the, quote, modern era, you know, that he's had that have just played lights out. Joey Porter, you know, guys that continue. Polamalu comes in as a young kid out of USC and Carnell Lake. And I'm going back now for some big names in Steeler history. And all of those guys are guys that will stand in line and talk about how much they love the guy. Ike Taylor spoke about him, you know, in a interview that I saw, and he said, I love Dick LeBeau. And that's a rare thing for have a player to say, I love the guy, and say it when he's right in the, not like, I love you, man. I'm talking about, I love you, Dick LeBeau. And his players feel that way about him. And I was touched, Neil. If you go back and it's worth digging into and finding it, his speech when he was, you know, accepted into the Hall of Fame. And what he talked about is something, it's a lesson, not for football coaches, but it's a lesson for people. Because he talked about, you know, the question about his age, right? He said, imagine what I would have given up had I retired at 65. The championships, all the interactions with the players, winning a Super Bowl, all of those things, I would have given up because I checked out on life. And what his message was live life because you got to live it to the fullest. And, you know, he said, age is a number. Why should I turn my back on my life's work because I'm 70 years old? That was when he was 70. Now he's 77 and still going. And why does he look so young? Well, part of it's genetics, but most of it's because Dick LeBeau lives life. Age is a number to him. And what a great lesson for all of us to learn.
So no pipe and slippers for you, Jeff.
You're going to be at that microphone till you're 90.
Mate, they'll have to drag me away. Rex Ryan is back as a head coach in the NFL with the Buffalo Bills. Looks like it's going to be a 5-year deal there. What do you make of that?
I think it is fantastic.
Yeah, we need more Rex Ryans.
Absolutely, because you know what? He's going to, we are laughing on the walk over here about the experience I had going to the Jets facility last year. And just how open Rex is, almost to the point sometimes where it'll shock you a little bit, because, you know, Neil, you've dealt with way more NFL head coaches than I have in your times interviewing, and you know how tight they can
be. They get guarded,
and how little they'll give you.
Oh, yeah.
Rex is completely the other way. He's going to give you everything that he has. He's just like his dad in that way, and just like Rob in that way. And, you know, we need more Ryans in this business. We need more guys that are willing to give you what they think, not what they think you need to know. And I'm happy for him. 5-year deal, got some good young players in Buffalo. Got to find a quarterback.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the Bills are going to love this marriage.
When I looked at the move, my first thought was, wow, Rex has gone from good defense, no quarterback, a running game, to the same thing in Buffalo. But, you know, we don't know what's gone on behind the scenes. We don't know what's happened in the interviews with the Atlanta Falcons. If you're offered a head coaching job in the NFL, you take it. I think that's we know that's an absolute given. And then part of me thought, well, actually, have the Buffalo Bills been very shrewd here? Because if you haven't got a quarterback or you've got an unproven commodity at quarterback and you need to get by with the running game and the defense, that's Rex Ryan's MO. That's what he's done in New York.
Yeah,
so smart move from Buffalo.
You look at the hires that have been made already or are reported to come. Mm. Right. First of all, Jim Schwartz is going to stay, and he's going to work on defense.
Yeah.
Now, that's a great combination. It'll be interesting to see how it works
some
out.
Some bravado there as well.
Yeah, because Schwartz is a 4-3 guy.
Yeah.
You know, Rex is typically a 3-4 guy, but, you know, even when he was in Baltimore, they did a lot of four-down stuff.
Yep.
But the thing about Schwartz is his guys play hard. Now, you talk about some attitude with those two guys coaching on one football team. And then he goes out and gets Joe Roman, who is a really good offensive coach when it comes to the power running game. You look at Buffalo, and you got, if they can get C.J. Spiller signed again, and, you know, they got Fred Jackson, who is, I think, a very underrated back, and they got Bryce Brown, who's had a 200-yard game in the National Football League. That's your three running backs, and they're good up front. They got a hole at right guard that they need to fill, but they've got good young offensive linemen. They got a tight end in Scott Chandler, who's a good enough tight end, I think certainly an upper-level tight end in the league, and then you got Goodwin outside that gives you vertical speed. You got Sammy Watkins, who's a dynamic guy out of the slot. They got big receivers.
Robert Woods, a receiver.
Buffalo's a football team that, you know, don't sleep on the Bills now, because you look at New England and the age at quarterback and some of those things, they're starting to come back to the pack a little bit. So I think Buffalo and Miami are teams that have a chance to, you know, make some noise next year.
All right, let's take a look at the games then. As we said, four fascinating games this weekend. Let's go in reverse order then, Jeff. Let's go with the most recent that we watched last night, and we'll work our way back to Saturday and where it all began with the Patriots and Ravens, who served up an absolute classic. But last night, the Indianapolis Colts 24, the Denver Broncos 13. This is, I think, what we're talking about in terms of it being a fascinating weekend, because it wasn't the greatest of games. It wasn't a classic, but it was clear as the night unfolded, Jeff. We might have been watching a little piece of NFL history, a little chapter coming to a close. We don't know this right now, and we won't know for a few weeks, I would imagine, but it felt like we were watching the end of one of the great ones in Peyton Manning. He really struggled last night.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that we were watching a guy's skills fall away from him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the competitiveness is still there. The toughness is still there. The heart to win is still there.
Yeah, the love
there.
For the game, yeah, and desire. Absolutely. It's all there.
All of that is there. But, you know, what's not there now is the ball coming out of his hand quick. The velocity on the ball is not there. The accuracy is starting to slip because mechanically now, as he breaks down a little bit, you know, he's never been a great athlete, so he relied on his fundamentals and those things. Now, as the athletic ability has started to wane even more, he just can't make up some of those throws. We talked on the walk over here about, you know, I know Emmanuel Sanders very closely. I coached the guy for 4 years, watched him go from a freshman to, you know, a third-round draft choice. And for the first time in all of his time in the pros, I saw frustration in his eyes. I saw the way he turned back at Peyton after a couple balls that he had chances to. You know, he won on routes, particularly on Toller a couple times, and just the utter frustration that he felt as a competitor because he wasn't able to get the ball. When is the last time you saw a receiver do that? That may be the first time I've ever seen a receiver do that to Peyton.
As we both said on that walk over, and Peyton took it.
Yeah,
Peyton took it. That was exactly.
You're exactly right, Neil. Peyton looked right back at him like, you know, I know.
I thought you made a great point last night on the Sky broadcast, Jeff, and it's worth repeating here just to, you know, put some context on how it happens to all of the legends of the game at the end. The game moves on. The game doesn't recognize how many years Peyton Manning has been in the NFL, how many records he had. The game says, can you hit that fly pattern that you're running downfield 15 times in the game? The game last night chewed Peyton Manning up and spat him out.
Yeah, here's the reality of it, right? For all of us, for every single one of us, for you, for me, for every player, for every coach, for every fan, we all love football. But football doesn't love anybody, mm-hmm. right? And the game doesn't care that you're going to the Hall of Fame. Mm. The game doesn't care what you did 5 years ago. The game doesn't care what you did two plays ago. It's a brutal game in terms of when your skills start to dissipate, the game's going to find, you know, the game's going to move on. And what we saw again was, and I've heard this said today, this morning, the changing of the guard. Well, it was so poignant to me at the end of the game. I'm watching Andrew Luck with a big smile on his face, talking to Michelle Tafoya about, you know, the opportunity to play in a championship game next week. And then the camera pans and follows Peyton off the field. And amazing as this is, it's the facts of life. Here goes one of the greatest to ever play the game into the tunnel. And the fans are, his own fans are taunting him and booing him on his way out.
Yeah.
And that's just the way the game is. It's so hard for players to know when it's time to go. And the game will tell you when it's time to go. And I think, you know, you look at it and I think it's now his time.
I agree with all of the, you know, the fans pay their money. They can say and do what they want to do. I just find it, you know, if the man's skills have eroded, I still think that's only happened over the second half of this season, really. There was a little bit of it last year. I think what I'm thinking is that the Broncos and Peyton Manning, yeah, he had the career neck operations.
Mm-hmm.
He came back and they gave it a shot. You know, he got three extra years. Jeff, you're pulling my headphones off.
Sorry, man.
my wire got caught under your chair. I know, everyone's thinking, what? How is he pulling his headphones off? Jeff's left across the desk at him. I think they gave it a good shot and he got 2.5 extra years out of his NFL career. I think it's really harsh that they're booing him, but I guess that's just the nature of it.
You know what? I think, really, if those fans that behave that way weren't so emotional about the fact that the season was over.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there was probably some alcohol involved in it. Usually is. It heightens the emotional state. they're so frustrated about losing the game. But if they would have taken the time to think about what they had an opportunity to see for 2 years in Denver,
yeah,
I think they would have certainly stood and applauded. I know I, as a football fan, watching him walk off the field, I was sad because, again, but then again, you realize it happens to everybody. There's very few who walk away.
They don't do that John Elway or Ray Lewis. You don't get to go out with the Vince Lombardi.
And what's going to be really interesting, he was very noncommittal about his future in his post-game press conference. And now what will happen is he'll go away and take time, probably get away from the facility, get away from football, spend time with his family, reassess where he is physically. You know, I understand he has a physical every February to see where his body is, and then make a decision whether he wants to continue or not continue. Here's the thing that's scary about that, or not scary, but just the catch 22 and all that, is that you go away and naturally you're a competitor. You're going to want to compete. Your body's going to feel better in February than it feels right now. But now you grind it up again, and here you go from March all the way through to January again next year. Your body's not going to feel better week 8. You know,
and the worrying thing is, Jeff, this is obviously, if his body has broken down at the end of this season, this is from making throws in practice, from making throws on the field. This is not a guy who takes a beating. You don't see him get sacked 6 or 7 times a game.
Not typically. And, you know, you're exactly right. It's all of the work. It's all of the grind in the weight room. It's the mental part of it, just the mental grind of preparing. Because he's not going to. I truly believe this. Peyton Manning has so much pride that he is not going to back up to the pay window. I mean, if he's going to play, he's going to do everything he can to play at the highest possible level. And what I saw yesterday was a guy who was frustrated in his own performance because he knows he can make those throws.
We will make it a passing of the torch. Andrew Luck was good, but not great yesterday. But I wanted to talk about, you know, and I think we can talk about Andrew Luck as we go into the weekend's games a bit more, and we'll talk about Peyton's future, certainly in the coming weeks on the Inside the Huddle podcast. But, Jeff, there's a change in this Indianapolis Colts team. And How they tackled really well yesterday.
Yeah, I tell you what, Greg Minuski really deserves some credit, their defensive coordinator. He has done a phenomenal job of toughening up that unit. You know, you go back to even when Tony was there and Peyton was the quarterback, the issue with Indianapolis was always whether they're physical enough and could stop anybody on defense. And you look at it last night, and here's a group of receivers with Julius Thomas, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Wes Welker, and a good running back, and they really did an outstanding job of playing defense. They tackled well. They were physical. They won the line of scrimmage. You know, and what's impressive to me when you look at, they've got two good corners, right? They've got a big corner, and they've got a corner, a cover corner, which is what you're going to need going through this thing. Mm. So, you know, Vontae Davis gives you that big physical corner that's a great tackler.
Yep.
And Greg Toler is a better corner than a lot of people realize.
He is.
The only place where I see a little bit of a liability in him, and we'll talk about this as we get into previewing the next game, is inside at safety. But even at that, they only exposed Landry one time in coverage. So I think that is certainly a plus, and it makes me think, without really spending a lot of time looking at the matchups, it makes me think that they do have a puncher's chance when they get into New England.
Let's look at the early game on Sunday then. The Green Bay Packers beat the Dallas Cowboys 26-21. Jeff, that in there is a coffee. I can tell you that's a coffee. Yours in there is a coffee. That's a phone. Those are some notes, but I don't know when a catch is a catch anymore.
Oh, man. Oh, you know, I'm going to have to say this way. Thank goodness for the technology, because the technology is helps enforce the rules.
Yep.
But let's take a look at that rule. I mean, there are so many things, and our listeners and our viewers have, you know, the tweets just burned up my phone about, you know, situations that they logically think through that make you go, well, if he'd extended the ball with one arm over the goal line and then came down in the goal line, is it a touchdown or is it a catch or a fumble, right? If his knee was down first and then the ball comes down, can the ground cause a fumble? No. Then how can the ground cause an incompletion? I don't get it. You know, again, here's one of the biggest challenges for the competition committee every year is when they look at, and this all comes back from what? Where does this call come from?
It's the Calvin Johnson where he traps the ball.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they make a rule, change a rule because of one play, right? And now here we go back, and they weren't thinking, well, what about in this situation? And now this situation comes up, and obviously, if you're a Cowboy fan, you're just like sick because there's a great play. They make an unbelievable decision.
Yeah,
I mean, Jason Garrett goes for it on fourth down. And what does Dom do? Dom walks everybody up and presses all over the field, forces the Cowboys to make the toughest throw in football, which is that jump ball fade against Sam Shields, their best cover corner, against the Cowboys' best receiver in Dez. It's all the drama
you want. Yeah.
And then we got to sit around and go,
wait for it.
Did the ball move or did the ball not move?
There's my issue with it, Jeff, because it was great drama. It's Dez Bryant going up and getting the football. It's Tony Romo trying to put a career-defining game together and, you know, win one of those big ones. And this is not on Romo. I'm not saying that, but he could have written his name in the stars there. And then we have to sit around and wait because nobody really is sure. And that takes the air out of everything that was so great about that moment.
Well, I'm all for technology if it eliminates the human element, right? And helps the play be decided by the players on the field. I'm not for the situation that we have with that rule because I just, in my heart of hearts, I got to say that's a catch. I mean, he has control of the football. Now, you got to understand, these receivers, their hands are so big that they can take that ball and they can grab it with one hand and control the football. Now, The other part of it I don't understand is he didn't make a football move. Well, what in the world is a football move when you've got a defensive back underneath your chest as you come down on the ground?
Yeah, you can't make one.
Again, that sounds like legalese to me. Yeah. It's just like a disclaimer that some lawyer wrote into the rule. And come on, I just think it's one of those things that we're going to have to look at in the offseason and try and find a way to improve the wording or the ruling so that, again, we don't get caught in one of these deals again.
Aaron Rodgers was very, very uncomfortable in the first half. You could see it. He just didn't look comfortable. He didn't get out of the pocket. He actually didn't get out of the pocket all night. But in the second half, he didn't need to. He ends up completing 317 yards worth of passes, 24 completions, three touchdowns, no interceptions. Randall Cobb goes over 100. Devontae Adams goes over 100. And I think Aaron Rodgers' winning touchdown pass to Richard Rodgers will end up being on his Hall of Fame highlight reel.
What a throw. You know, here's the thing that's most incredible.
One leg.
It's the thing most incredible to me is the guy hasn't thrown an interception at home since you were in eighth grade. I mean,
that's a long time ago.
It's amazing. You know, how many balls has he thrown?
I still had hair when he threw his last interception.
How many balls has he thrown without an interception? That is absolutely incredible.
He went over 500, didn't he, last night?
And here too, this is the other thing that amazes me. And we don't, maybe because of his personality or his body language or whatever, he's so California cool that here's a guy out there playing on one leg. Right. Mm. And if it was maybe Brett Favre, we'd made a big deal out of the fact he's limping around and he's how tough he is and all that stuff. How tough is Aaron Rodgers? He didn't practice all week. He's on one leg and he is still finding ways to get his football team to win. Now, additionally, the coach in me loves the game because I watch Rod Marinelli do a great job of scheming some things that the Cowboys rarely do, playing all that man, playing all that two-man, because he knows the quarterback can't get out of the pocket and run around on him. Then what happens? The Packers counter, and they go to four receivers and a tight end to force the Cowboys into some coverage matchup problems. And bingo, all of a sudden, he goes from throwing, I think, 76 yards in the first half to if he had 2 halves like he had in the second half, he had a 500-yard day. So, I mean, what a phenomenal game. Just an unbelievable game of great plays, great players, great coaching, the whole thing. It had it all.
Aaron Rodgers is perfect for that Packers team as well because there's nothing to do in Green Bay. And I interviewed him a couple of years ago, and he is very down to earth. He doesn't seek the limelight. You know, you don't see Aaron Rodgers at the opening of an envelope. Now, he has TV commercials that he does, yes, but he's perfectly happy not being a celebrity quarterback. I asked him on this interview, and he was great with his time. He gave me about half an hour. I said to him, "What are you doing? What are you doing your spare time?" He's like, "There's not really anything to do in Green Bay." He said, especially in the winter. He said, "So you do all your football work." He said, "I come home, I play a few video games, I play the guitar, and then I go to bed." He is the most unassuming. So, you know, he's perfect for that market because, you know, he doesn't need the bright lights of New York City. And also, the production is there to follow Brett Favre, so he ticks all the boxes for the Packers fans.
Yeah, you know, it's so unique, that situation, that Packers situation. One of the reasons why I think it's captured everybody's, you know, imagination, and this is historical. Mm. Here you got a city of, I think it's less than 200,000 people.
Yeah, it's a town, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Competing against these major media markets, New York, Chicago, you know, Atlanta, Dallas, Houston. And little old Green Bay, who doesn't have an owner, it's owned by the people, it somehow finds a way to compete and play with the big boys. Now, a lot of the credit, and this guy doesn't, he's just like Brett Favre, he's not a limelight guy. But I think the guy that really deserves a lot of credit is Ted Thompson, their GM.
Yep.
And Teddy's an SMU guy, so I had a chance to get to know him. He came down a number of times to look at Emmanuel when Emmanuel was coming out. And really, Teddy was a linebacker at SMU and then went on and played for the Houston Oilers, really kind of a special teams guy for the Oilers for a number of years, then got into, you know, the management side of it. But he has done an amazing job of balancing the cap, knowing, much like New England, knowing when it's time to let guys go. You know, I mean, he got ripped from Greg Jennings and so, but there's times when.
And Greg Jennings is a player going that way, down, declining player.
And he's going to have some of those issues again this offseason, but Ted always seems to find guys under the radar, guys that, you know, Tremont Williams is a free agent, comes in to become one of the better corners in the league. You know, they got guys all over the map on that football team that are playing probably well beyond their draft status.
Let's move on to Saturday's games, and we'll start with the second one as we go in reverse order here. Seattle Seahawks 31, Carolina 17. Russell Wilson was outstanding, 15 of 22, 268 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. This was a 4-point game at the half, and then the Seahawks pulled away. But it was a good game for a long period. And the Panthers, I mean, the defensive effort on both teams was outstanding. And the Seahawks were just too strong in the end, Jeff. Right?
Yeah, you know, my son, Kate Cole, is probably the biggest Panther fan in the whole world. And with 2 minutes left to go in the game, I had to excuse myself from the broadcast and go get on the phone and make sure that I said, I want you to take your belt, take your shoelaces, all sharp objects out of the drawer, because he was so down.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's such a magical run by Carolina late in the season. They came back from that middle of the year where they were just dreadful, and Ron kept them together, and then they started to really play at the end, and their defense gave a heroic effort. It's just they're not there yet. They just don't have enough players. But, again, I think they're a team that, you know, is on the rise. They did some great things. Shoot, they won that division for the first time in the history of the division. They've ever been back-to-back champions. But you really saw how good Seattle is.
Yeah.
And how, particularly, Neil, I think how good Seattle is at home.
Yeah. Well, on Thursday, Jeff, when we come back to preview the championship games, we're going to do our meaningless stats again because people like that. Meaningful or meaningless stats. But here's one for you right now, a little sneak preview. The Seattle Seahawks passing attack was ranked 27th in the NFL this year.
Again, you know,
look at what Russell.
That's why
they've got enough, haven't they? Without that,
yeah. And you know what? And I don't know. I don't know this for a fact because I'm not a football historian.
Mm.
But my belief system is, since the game was first invented, that if you had more points at the end of regulation than your opponent, that was a good stat. Now, the rest of them are all kind of out there.
Variations below that, right?
Gradients below that.
Yeah, that's the top. That's the Everest of stats. And I've just provided you with a little hill. Yeah, I mean, it's the defense is definitely looking a lot like the one of a year ago, if not. Even better? Can they look any better?
And I'm going to tell you something. The guy that looks like his game's improved is the quarterback. I think Russell Wilson is really a dynamic young quarterback. Now, he's not.
Well, he led them offensively. It wasn't Marshawn Lynch.
No, you're exactly right.
It was Russell Wilson took that offense.
You're exactly right, because other than one run, Carolina really took the runaway. And they forced Russell to win the game.
Mm.
And again, you're talking about a guy who does not have, let's be honest about what they have in Seattle as weapons. He's got Luke Wilson, a young tight end who can run, right? But not a guy that you would consider in the top five tight ends in the league.
No.
And he's got Kearse, who's a free agent.
Undrafted.
Should
free
be
agent,
a three or a four. And then he's got Doug Baldwin, who probably is at best a two in most, and I say a second, and your number two threat in most offense, and that's what he's winning with.
Yeah.
So you look at that and you go, even though he's not that stand in the pocket, deliver the football, look pretty guy, he's a run around, make plays happen.
Tremendous touch,
great vision for the field when he gets out of the pocket. Very much similar to a guy that you and I remember maybe as kids playing this game, was a tremendous quarterback in Minnesota. You know, Fran Tarkenton, he gets out of the pocket. Yep. He makes plays happen. He's short. It's tough for him sometimes to throw from the pocket because it's hard for him to see. So what does Darrell Bevell do?
He schemes
out of the pocket and lets him play to his strengths.
The first game of the weekend, the Baltimore Ravens and New England Patriots. New England end up winning 35-31. Brady has 367 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. We'll just finish off with this game, Jeff, and then we'll do the mailbag on Thursday. On Inside the Huddle when we come back and preview the conference championships. First thing that stood out to me on this one, I thought both teams rode out the ebbs and flows of a game that you get. And if you're going to look at the Patriots, trailed 14-0, fight their way back. Trailed 28-14. Okay, are we going to go into our shell this time? Because you can't come back from 14 twice in the same game. They fought their way back. Mentally tough. This is a people all the time, I'm bored of seeing the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Kev says it a lot, actually. Mm-hmm. Kev's like, I don't want to see the Patriots. Mm-hmm. They're always in there. You know? I can't help but begrudgingly admire this team. I mean, to be this consistently good, this mentally tough, you have to take your hat off to them.
Yeah, I mean, this is a validation, if you will, of the Patriot way.
Yep.
You know, which is everybody on the roster contributes. There's no other than, you know, maybe the quarterback is obviously a superstar. Mm. But other than that, you know, Gronkowski's a star. But
who's their demon pass rusher?
Exactly.
They all do it.
Vince is a force inside, but he's not J.J. Watt. He's not that kind of guy. You look at their linebacking core, you know, their best linebackers are, you know, hurt. And Ninkovich is a guy that Ninkovich, to me, is the New England Patriots.
Sums them up, doesn't
they
it?
Get so much out of him.
Yep.
Right? Because he's smart, he's tough, he's disciplined. And, you know, where they've helped themselves now is they're better in the back end than they have been for a couple of years. Patrick Chung has come back home and is playing much better than he did in Philadelphia.
Yep.
So, again, I think it's validation of what the Patriots are in that they're, like you said, exactly what you said. They're a resilient, mentally tough, fundamentally sound football team that typically doesn't beat itself. And you can get ahead of them, and they don't panic. They just believe in what in their system and the way they do things. And just, again, it was validation of the Patriot way.
And what about the way they did it in the second half? I mean, the only running play was Tom Brady. I mean, everything.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because we're talking with Evan Moore, you know, who played in the NFL. And you know, at halftime, he was saying, you know, the Patriots got to run the football. That's exactly right if you go by the book. But the Patriots don't do anything by the book. They have their way. And that means if Brady has to throw it 55 times, then they're going to throw it 55 times. Now, if you play a front or give them a look where they have the run, then they'll show you they'll run the thing 200 yards a game. So there's no selfishness in that system. And I think that's, again, a great word for the Patriots. They're an unselfish football team. Josh McDaniels, as the coordinator on offense, isn't I'm going to show you, I'm going to run it. Guy, what, you show him a look, he can't run it, he's not going to run it, he's going to throw it. So again, I was proud of Baltimore.
I think Kubiak played really well.
And this is, how about Kubiak coming out today and saying, I'm not leaving, I've made a commitment to stay in Baltimore. Great for Joe Flacco. Great for Baltimore, because they've got a really good offense.
Just on the Flacco, I saw a couple of things, read a couple of things after the game. Flacco gets picked off at the end. Jaron Harmon intercepts it in the end zone. A couple of things sort of almost suggesting that Flacco got greedy too soon there. But I looked at the coverage back, and I was watching some stuff on the NFL Network, and he had Torrey Smith single coverage. So did he get greedy, or was he just guilty of not looking off the safety?
You know what? There you go. Damn, you're turning into a coach on here.
I'm sat with you two. Don't go back, Jeff. Don't go back.
You know, here's the thing
that's exactly right.
Let's
keep Jeff.
He went to the single coverage that, you know, that was the right choice.
Yeah.
Where his game will grow, and I think Kubiak will really help him with this, is learning how to manipulate the safety with your eyes and shoulders. Mm. And we showed earlier in the day some clips of quarterbacks who really understood how to keep the safety where you want him and then throw away from the safety. So what happened with him, he saw the single that he wanted. He saw the matchup he wanted. He knew where he wanted to go with the ball. And then his eyes and shoulders went there before they needed to, which allowed the high safety to really play to his eyes. Because you got to give the Patriots coaches credit, because I'm sure they broke down enough tape and watched Flacco. Here's what happens so fans can get a feel. If you're the secondary coach, you look at the end zone copy film, which is, you go, why in the world would you look at the end zone copy? Mm. Because you want to see what the quarterback's looking at. You want to see where his eyes go. So you take the safeties, particularly, into a meeting room and say, okay, we're going to look at Flacco from the end zone copy today on all his deep balls. And you see where he looks. Will he open his shoulder early? Will he go take his eyes through his threat? Will he look us off? If he won't look you off, then you're going to go to his eyes right now. And that's what that's what Harmon did.
Because you see it when you watch the games last night. If you get even half a step head start because you've done the film study and you can cheat by half a step, look at the touchdown that Rodgers threw to Richard Rodgers. Sterling Moore is an inch too late.
Yep.
So these are tiny, like you said about Frank Gans, what's the tiny gains?
Yeah, so you're talking small wins, you know. That's, you're looking for those slight edges, those small wins every down. And you know, you go back to any given Sunday, and I love the movie, because I think it's reasonably facsimile of
football. People don't normally like football
movies. What really happens? But you know, Al Pacino talks about those inches.
Yeah.
Those inches are everywhere. Right? So, you know, and that's true. The game is for a game that's divided into yards, it's 10 yards for a first down, 100 yards yeah. on the field, 50, 53 and a third yards wide. It really is a game of inches, not yards.
I'm out of coffee, Jeff. So once I'm out of coffee, then we're out of the podcast. We're done. So, yeah, we thank you for listening, Jeff. Great stuff
awesome,
today.
Awesome, man. I tell you what, can't wait. We're back Thursday?
Thursday. We're going to come back Thursday, preview the AFC and NFC Championship games.
Look forward to it, man.
All right, that was Jeff Reinbold. I've been Neil Reynolds. It's Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sports Lobster, the sports social network. It's a USP content production. And we're very pleased to report that we'll see you all on Thursday.
Aloha.